Tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz. It's Tuesday night at 8 p.m. and it's time for another episode of Health and the Awakening of the Self. Here we teach, we give information out about health to preserve and restore your health, and we also give techniques and information out called self-inquiry, the teachings of Vedanta. And this is to enable you to awake to your real self. Why should we be interested in our real self? Well, because the self that most people are living is, as Buddha found out 2,500 years ago, not their real self. He called it an illusionary, non-existent self. And that particular self is made up of projections, thoughts, feelings, and all the other mental aspects that go into it. And it seems real to us while we're living through it, but it's very constrictive, it's very claustrophobic, and most people want to grow into their real self, into their self of inner freedom, inner harmony, inner joy, inner happiness, inner peace. And that's what this program is here for, to facilitate that natural growth, natural expansion of consciousness. My name is Dr. Mike. I'm an MD and a naturopathic physician, and I'm also a teacher of meditation for many years. The goal of this program, or the slogan, if you like, is that the mind may it be absorbed in the heart, may fall into the heart, may be absorbed in the state of being, in the state of presence. This program is more about the statement about being and presence than it is about mental manipulation. You can call into this program at any time. The telephone number is 831-427-3772. And our email here is frsc@freakradio, all one word, F-R-E-A-K, freakradio.org. Again, the phone number is 831-427-3772. Write it down so you can have it handy at any time. If you want to call in and discuss and comment on what's going on or discuss any problems that you want to discuss or comments. All right, so that'll be enough for an introduction right now. We're going to go to the first talk we're going to go is by Rupert Spira. And he is an advocate of non-dual teachings, teachings of self-inquiry. He's originally from England, but I believe he lives in the United States. So the title of his talk is Avoiding Painful Feelings, something we all know about or did know about in the past.
There's so much history. There's so much. You get together with your family and you're all having a nice chat around the Christmas table or whatever, and there's so much underneath the surface that is not being said. That's everyone is to a greater or lesser degree aware of, but it's we've all agreed not to speak about it. Yeah, it's just too difficult. It's too painful. So let's talk about Father Christmas or whatever. So we're having this conversation, but some more than others are aware of this undercurrent just below the surface, usually not very deeply below the surface. And some of us are less willing to play the game of avoiding what's below the surface and just carrying on sweetly chatting. So you're having this conversation, you get halfway through the conversation and you become aware of what's really going on around the table, what's going on just below the threshold of conscious thought. And what you feel at that moment, what you describe as grief or sorrow, is actually partly your own, but partly the conflict, the sorrow, the difficulties that are contained in the family, all the held feelings that are implicit but are not being expressed and resolved. And you become very aware of that, particularly, as you say, when thought ceases. The main function of thought and its extension conversation around the table is precisely to prevent what's really going on being fully felt. It's too painful. So let's keep thinking and talking, because as long as we're talking 19 to the dozen, there's no room for these feelings to be fully felt. So the purpose of much of our social intercourse is precisely to keep this deeper feeling of grief and sorrow at bay. Now, in you, you describe these moments where thought comes to an end. You can't keep up the charade any longer. You're so acutely aware of the sorrow that's just below the surface. And it doesn't matter whether it's your sorrow or the sorrow doesn't belong. It's the collective sorrow. In this case, the collective sorrow or grief in the family. And you become very sensitive to it because the veneer has cracked. You can't hold it together anymore. You can't put a smile on it. So you become very aware of it. And you become at the same time aware that other family members can't afford to be aware of it, that they're not willing to let themselves be aware of it. It's too painful. So right there, their resistance to their sorrow is another layer of sorrow. It breaks your heart to see that people are so afraid to allow these feelings to come up, and all this layer of social intercourse is designed precisely to keep it all at bay. So that's what you're feeling. What do you do about it? You do about it exactly the same thing that you do about all these kind of feelings, whether they're apparently your own or apparently belong to the community, in this case your family, which is you do nothing about them. And by doing nothing about them, I mean you know yourself at that moment as this open, allowing space, which is completely open to these feelings, that isn't suppressing them, isn't trying to avoid them, isn't afraid of them, isn't trying to avoid them through activities or substances, isn't trying to suppress them through fear. It's just totally open, no agenda with them, not going to launch into a mission with your mother-in-law or your whoever it is, because you don't have an agenda. You're not going to start trying to change these feelings, but nor are you willing to play the game of avoiding and suppressing them. So you're just totally open to them, but that also means open to the conversation, you know, open to the conversation, because that's also part of what's going on. You see what the conversation is designed to do. It's designed to avoid having to feel this undercurrent of sorrow, but you don't judge the conversation. They're doing their best. They're doing what they've been conditioned to do. It's their way of coping. They don't know better. So there's no judgment or avoidance of the conversation. There's no judgment or avoidance of the undercurrent of sorrow. You're totally open to it all. Or rather, you know yourself as that one which is already totally open to all of it. And that's the position you take. You don't take a position. You find yourself as that one, and you respond as that one. So you may still engage in what appears to be this superficial conversation. You may continue talking about the weather, but your conversation is informed by the position you are taking, which is actually the absence of a position. In just the same way that we did with the experiment earlier, you carry on the conversation about the weather or the Christmas cake or whatever it is, but somehow your part of the conversation, what you bring to the table, will be deeply informed by the place at which you stand. Somehow, even if your words remain the same, something of where you are coming from, something of your feeling understanding, will deliver itself, will express itself. It doesn't mean that it'll transform the situation in a few minutes. It probably won't. But you'll do the very best. When I say you now, I mean your body-mind will do the very best that it is capable of in expressing this deeper understanding in response to the current situation. It may or may not have an effect that shows immediately, but even if it doesn't show, something will be planted. Something of this silence and this openness, this lack of judgment and this absence of fear that is in you will communicate itself somehow. And it'll sow a seed.
That's great, thank you, because I've noticed, for instance, sometimes when Catherine and I will have conversation on the phone or whatever, and perhaps one of us going off on a narrative, and it's great because suddenly one of us will say, actually, I just can't bother to talk about this anymore. And it's great, so we just have a good laugh, and that's the end of the conversation, because yes. The awareness is there.
Yes, but that in a way is a different situation, because
yes.
There
yes,
it's a conversation
that.
Between two people who share this understanding, so you can
yes.
afford to be much more direct.
Yes.
You know that you can risk it with Catherine.
Yes.
You can say, Catherine, you know, you're talking nonsense.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
You didn't really mean that.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah. Yeah.
So, but with your family around the table, and it's a different situation.
Yeah. It feels much more delicate somehow.
You can't go directly with a friend in truth. You can. We can be much more direct. In the way that we are here, we speak very directly, but in a situation where we're with another or a group or another person, with someone who doesn't share this understanding, we can't always be this direct, and sometimes it would be detrimental.
Mm.
It would be inappropriate and insensitive.
Absolutely.
To be so direct, and then
yeah.
we have to be very sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
And tailor this understanding.
Mm.
To the situation.
Yeah.
Which will usually mean speaking in very dualistic terms, seeming to condone the separate self that they take themselves to be.
Yeah.
And so it's you have to find a way of expressing this understanding, and the criteria should always be this: to provoke as little resistance in the other as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the way to do that is to go with them. To go to them, to go, if they're going in this direction, you go with them in this direction. You don't try and say,
yes,
no, it's
yes.
not like that. You say, okay, you're
yes.
going in this direction, I'm coming
yes.
with you.
Yes.
And off you go in this direction, and you just slowly, slowly, slowly change direction. Maybe not all the way around, but maybe you just come off the course that they were on, just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Open them to another possibility. That's maybe enough.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So provoke as little resistance, because once resistance has been provoked,
yes.
Ego springs back into place, and then we defend ourselves.
Yes.
And anything that we say after that tends to reinforce this defensive position of the ego.
Mm-hmm.
So be sensitive and find ways, and they're always fresh ways in the moment. There are no prescriptions
yes.
of tailoring this understanding to the moment.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks.
Okay, that was Rupert Spira. And you'll find his other talks on YouTube if you care to follow up on his teaching. Now I'm going to introduce you to my favorite singer of all times, a lady singer. And her name is Sarah Brightman. The Welsh singer Jenkins is up there as well. But Sarah Brightman has to take the first place for me. And now here we'll have her singing "Memory." It's from the Cats musical.
Moonlight.
That was Andrew Lloyd Webber's musical from Cats. And that was Sarah Brightman. I've seen her in London in person when I used to live there. I attended some of her concerts. She's a wonderful singer. And we'll hear more of her tonight. I'm introducing her to those people who haven't heard of her before. So we'll have a few of her songs tonight. If you were listening last night, we talked about a very fundamental thing to understand about health. If you're going to restore your health, if you're going to understand anything about your health, you've got to understand this basic phenomenon, which is there are certain molecules out there that are called free radicals, and they're missing an electron, and they attack other molecules and disintegrate the other molecules. This applies to the food we eat. That's why people cook with wine. It's been shown scientifically that people who cook with wine in their bloodstream have less free radicals. And also everything, the pollution in the air and in our food and in our water, all those are free radicals that attack our body. Also, plastics that we use everywhere today is we have all these things in our body. They've been detected. We have heavy metals in our body that also do the same kind of thing. And everything that's polluted with chemicals, basically, even being overweight, is showing that you create more oxidation, or more of these free radicals. So the free radicals enter the body and they attack cells, and they eventually, these cells, when they divide, they have abnormal qualities, and when they divide again, they kind of fizzle out and die. So a billion, that is 1,000 with 6 noughts after it. That's like a billion. A billion of these cells die, you know, every so often. Each organ has a different lifespan of these cells. And Dr. Bergman, we're going to hear him now, the second part of his talk on this. And he went through the different organs and told us how long the cells of that organ live for. I mean, I remember the blood was 120 days. Some of them are very short, only 5 or 6 or 7 days. Others are longer. Anyway, it's very, very important to understand this phenomenon. These free radicals also attack the lining of our arteries. That's the endothelium. That's called the endothelium. It's a one-layer thick lining of our thousands and thousands of miles of arteries that we have. Some are only small capillaries. Some are larger. And the damage to these arteries, the endothelium, is one of the causes why we get arteriosclerosis, why our blood vessels don't respond to nitrous oxide, don't respond to the dilating the arteries, so they become more rigid and more constricted, and that means our blood pressure goes up. And these damaged arteries are the cause of heart attacks and strokes, so it's really important to understand this phenomenon. It's actually at the basis of all the modern diseases in the Western world. So really, when you look at it from this viewpoint angle, we only have one disease and one cure. And the disease is all these diseases like heart attacks, diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoarthritis, Alzheimer's disease, dementia, and a whole other list of diseases that Dr. Berman talked about in the talk last week, the first part of the talk. These are all have a fundamental cause, and that is damage by free radicals. So anybody who really wants to understand his health has to understand this level, because there are treatments at this level. There's things that we'll talk about, these things, maybe not tonight, but in the near future. Curcumin is one, very strong antioxidants. You've heard of antioxidants. These are substances with extra electrons in them. So they neutralize the free radicals. So curcumin or turmeric is one. Then we have quercetin, that's found in apples and onions. And the third one I'm thinking about is the fruit, pomegranate. Pomegranate, very good for cleaning up the arteries, and we'll talk in more detail about those particular substances. There's three of them at least. And there's other antioxidants that we'll go into another time. But I just want you to understand, this is a very important concept to understand because it's at the basis of all these modern diseases in the Western world. I know they all have individual treatments, but this is at a very fundamental level. That's why it's very important to eat fruits and vegetables, because that is where you get the natural antioxidants, fruits and vegetables. The body needs, I think, 4,700 milligrams of potassium. In order to get that on a daily basis, in order to get that, you need to be eating 7 cups of vegetables every day. How many of us actually eat 7 cups of vegetables every day? And you need to eat a certain amount of raw food, because it's been shown that cooking certain foods kills the vitamins and other things. It interferes with the natural nutrients of the food. So a lot of people recommend about 60%. I think that's a reasonable figure with raw food, big salads and smoothies of one sort or another. All right, I'm glad to now hand you over to Dr. John Bergman. He's a chiropractor on the west coast of California. He's a good teacher. He's very knowledgeable. Here he is.
Cardiovascular disease and strokes. heart attacks, chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, diabetes, arthritis. And then I start looking, wait a second, I've seen this list before. Inflammatory diseases, Alzheimer's, asthma, heart disease, depression, diabetes. So wait a second, I've seen this list before. So we then go to chronic degenerative diseases, heart disease, cancer, diabetes, arthritis. So wait a second, do you mean that every one of these diseases could be from the body not handling oxidative stress well? That means they're free radical formation, or the body's breaking down faster and it's building up, or the body has a systemic inflammatory response leading to a degenerative condition, that all of these diseases have the same source? Wow, that's something. Because if that's true, the entire medical world has their head, is not thinking correctly. So when we look at this, think of this, because I know this is a radical different approach. Imagine if health was your natural state. If disease didn't exist, that your body's just adapting to the stressors of normal physiology. If you're breaking your system down by taking in toxic components and your body can't regenerate itself, then that means that you're going to have a disease. So this is aging. This is everything. Your body building up faster than it breaks down is health. Your body breaking down faster than it is death. When we look at all of these diseases, heart attacks, chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, aging, strokes, cardiovascular disease, they're all from the same source, inflammation or oxidative stress. This is a totally different approach. So think of that. All the medications, what medication would you take for a heart attack? They'd give you an aspirin a day, right? Even though that's the leading cause of kidney disease and the fourth deadliest drug in America, and increases your risk of stroke, when that source could be oxidative stress or inflammation. What do they give for cardiovascular disease? A cholesterol-lowering drug? Do you realize that you have a 1% increase in death if you take one of those things for 10 years? That 75% of people that have a heart attack or stroke have normal cholesterol? Normal to low cholesterol? I mean, it's insanity to see these diseases and categorize them differently and treat them with different chemicals when they're all from the same source. It's amazing. So now we have to take a different approach on human beings. Look at your body has constantly been regenerating, constantly, and you don't break down. You don't have disease. Skin's brand new every 28 days. Blood's brand new every 120 days. Bones are brand new about 11 to 14 months. When we look at the stomach, 5 days. A billion of these cells every day are replaced. And you do this by replacing it out of anything. I mean, they ate sawdust and wallpaper paste in World War II. Of course, they had lower heart disease rates. Did you ever see the studies on Norway? The German soldiers took the meat and it left plant products for the Norwegian citizens, and they ended up having less death rates during the war than without. I know, it's amazing. But when we look at this, the nervous system controls the function of this. So this entire system has to maintain 7.35 to 7.45. And it does this by either sacrificing minerals, sacrificing nutrients, to do anything it can. So if we can help the system with that oxidative process, with that cell rebuilding process, we're going to have health. Yes or yes?
Yes.
I know, it makes sense. I mean, here's a patient. I mean, obviously that's physical stress, chronic lung problems. So instead of viewing chronic lung problems as one source, okay, one source for all diseases, one cause, one cure. That's the new methodology. If there's one source for lung problems, it's going to be a problem with oxidative stress or chronic inflammation, right? Yes or yes? Yeah, so instead of getting him on vegetable juice, taking an x-ray, finding him, he was given steroids. How stupid is that? And then you can see, obviously, he's not straight, so he had pain, so he was given pain relievers and muscle relaxants. That's ridiculous. That's him 90 days later. And all we do is just say, okay, what should he have if he has poor digestion and he needs healthy nutrients? Should we maybe pre-digest the food and give him some vegetable juice? Yeah, same thing we do for somebody with fibromyalgia, because it's the same source. So your body is dependent. Your body is made up of 70 trillion of these. These are all cells. Now, I know this is going to scare you because the cell is made of a double bilipid layer. That means two layers of fat. That means the cell wall, every cell wall, has a layer of cholesterol in it. 70 trillion cells. You might think, oh God, I have too much cholesterol. Let me get it out of my system. No. Your body needs cholesterol. 70 trillion cells, two layers of it. So the health of you depends on the health of your cell. So health isn't lack of symptoms. I mean, I went down to Mexico this week. I went there because they have the best mercury removal system around because I still got amalgam fillings. I know I'm supposed to get rid of the amalgam fillings. They've been in there for over 40 years. Okay, they're supposed to last like 20. Anybody have a fear of the dentist? Or is it just me? Okay, dreaded fear of the dentist, okay? God bless you. So I put it off. And I go there, and they have a vitamin C IV in my arm, okay? A rubber dam, vacuum extraction to keep the doctor and nurse safe, okay? And they're doing everything they can. But did it feel good while they were doing it? No! I'm still sore! It was 2 days ago. Okay, but so is health lack of symptoms or is health optimal cell function? So I'm willing to deal with this bit of pain to get better cell function because I have less heavy metals. If I drop a brick on my toe, if I had stage 3 syphilis, I wouldn't feel it. If I had horrible diabetes, I wouldn't feel it. So pain isn't, healthy function is not lack of pain. It's optimal cell function. So sickness is lack of optimal cell function. That's it. That's cancer, that's diabetes, that's heart disease, that's schizophrenia. It's every disease on the planet. Health is optimal cell function. Sickness is lack of optimal cell function. Optimal cell function requires nutrients coming in, the oxidative metabolic processes, and an appropriate systemic inflammatory response when you need it. They did a survey in this at USA Today, and it just blew me away. Because, I mean, I'm in a different world. People come in here, we get them healthy, and they get off of drugs. I'm not aware of what the average person is doing. 2010 did a study of seniors over 65. They found 0% of the seniors had zero medications. Now, all medications either block an enzyme or poison an enzyme or block a receptor site in a cell. So every medication on the planet, prescription medication, is actually going to kill you slow earlier. Okay, it's going to decrease the oxidative metabolism. It's going to cause a negative in your system long term. 0% of these guys had zero medications. Now, they found out 23%, or almost 1 in 4, had 1 to 3 prescriptions. Now, nobody tests two drugs together. You never test the sleep medication with the muscle relaxant with the anti-inflammatory. Okay. You never test those three together. You never test three drugs together. Because, I mean, let's just look at this logically and not because this is BS science. It's not real science. If we have 10 people in the room, all with the exact same diagnosis, all over 65, let's make it even easier. Okay. And they're all taking, oh, like 46% of them, between 4 and 9 prescriptions. What's the average of that? Let's say 6, okay? Let's say we give 10 people 6 different prescriptions, all for the same diagnosis. Are we going to have the same outcome with each person? Not even close. What kind of, what's that thing with the dice? It's called what? That's exactly what it is. 46% had 4 to 9 prescriptions? That's not science. And then we got 10 to 19, 25%, 19 drugs. The record here so far has been 32 prescriptions. The patient came in 32 prescriptions. She had it for about a year. She lost her license because she ran into like a car or something. Luckily, nobody got hurt. And she was upset because the police arrested her for drunk driving. She says, no, I'm not drunk at all. I'm on 32 prescriptions. They're all legal. I know. I mean, when we look at this, this is a reversal of the curve in the neck. Okay, that's grade 2 arthritis. That's a restored curve in the neck. But again, One cause, one cure. If she has a reverse curve in the neck, is she going to be breathing correctly? No. Is she going to have pain? Absolutely. So she's going to have more catecholamines, more stress hormones, more endorphins.
Okay, we'll break there on that talk by Dr. John Bergman. We'll pick it up on the next show, which will be next Monday from 6 o'clock to 8. So we'll now go back to a little music. Again, we'll have Sarah Brightman and I had it set up, but it somehow changed, flipped. So this time we're going to have Pavarotti singing Nisam Dorma. Pavarotti singing Nosam Dharma. And now we're coming towards the end of the show, so we might only have enough time for one or two more little talks. So, okay, the next one that we have is by Eckhart Tolle, and he's going to... When loss appears in your life, don't resist it. That's the name of the talk.
Beliefs suddenly crumbled. In other words, whether content, whether physical...
Okay, I bring it back to the beginning of the talk again here.
When I had been in my darkest moment, I happened to read The Power of Now. What Eckhart Tolle had to say about happiness had been the impetus to go on this journey. I was in Vancouver to meet him.
You were there on a park bench for 2 years.
Oh, it suddenly skipped into a different talk. So we're back again to the correct talk. When loss appears in your life, don't resist it. The name of the talk.
It is often for people who have gone through this transformation, as it seems almost accidentally, it happened to them, and in almost every case, perhaps every case, you will see it didn't happen to them when things were added to them, so they got more and more and became greater and bigger. No, it happened to them when things were taken away. Content was removed. Whether external things that were important to them, possessions, social functions, status in society, relationships, people close to them, or inner things, mental beliefs, suddenly crumbled. In other words, whether content, whether physical content, external content, or mental content was taken away from them. And then those people who accidentally, so to speak, went through this transformation of consciousness, suddenly something happened. And now, later when they speak about it, that is often colored by the language that they use, which is according to whatever culture they live in, whether they say Buddha nature suddenly emerged, I knew myself as my essence as Buddha, whether they say Christ consciousness, I knew my essence as Christ, whether they say I knew myself as pure consciousness, whatever words, or they might not even have any words to say anything about it. But something happened that the Buddha calls the end of suffering, not because something was added. There was not an enhanced sense of self. There was a diminished sense of self through loss, through suffering. And then it happened. So that is the case when it happens to humans accidentally. So suffering, or the suffering, and this is a beautiful paradox, a large part of human suffering is inflicted by the madness. And yet, it's the very suffering, in many cases inflicted by the collective mental illness, that drives you to the point of collapse. When suffering reaches a state of acuteness or intensity, and often it happens through great loss. So every disaster, whether on a personal level or on a collective level, it looks dreadful, and from that point of view it is dreadful. Every disaster is also an opening into something far deeper. It's an opening as if something was suddenly opening up, and there's a dimension that before was covered up by the forms. Often disaster means the forms dissolve. It can happen when something collapses, that is a very obvious thing, a form dissolves, but it can happen inside a person's head when thought forms dissolve, identification with the mental images of me dissolve, firmly held beliefs dissolve, and you no longer know on the level of mind who you are. Suddenly all explanations don't make sense anymore. And so there's great loss, and yet that loss, one could almost say it's as if a hole were appearing in the fabric of existence suddenly. And of course the fabric of physical existence is very fragile. The hole could appear at any moment in everybody's life. And suddenly there's this, it's painful. But that is the hole where something, I rarely use the word God, because it's been misused so much. could say God shines through whenever a form dissolves, whenever that whole appears in the fabric of your existence, and sooner or later the whole will appear in everybody's fabric, no matter how comfortably their life is arranged right now. They may have a nice job and a family and a pension plan, and yet at any moment the whole could appear, and it will appear. You will die, the body will dissolve, people around you will die, the forms will dissolve, they're destined to dissolve. So this can be the source of great suffering, but potentially it's a great opening. So the beautiful paradox is that the very madness is also inseparable from liberation from the madness, because it's the suffering that's caused by the madness that takes you to that point of liberation. When you encounter the effects of the madness, whether on a collective or personal level, encounter them in an acute form. And so things often dissolve violently around you. And so here we have that lesson: when loss appears in your life, not to resist it. And loss will appear. It must appear. When something gets taken away, something is removed from you, not to resist that movement. So there's a, with that acceptance of whatever it is, whatever the isness of this moment may present, not to resist it. It is.
That was Eckhart Tolle talking to us about the role of suffering and loss in life, how those things can actually play a part in liberating us from form, from thought and form, into our more expansive spiritual self. Okay, this is the end of tonight's program. I enjoyed being with you. I hope you enjoyed the show. I hope you learned something useful. And we're going to leave you now with Andre Bocelli. He's singing with the Mormon Temple Choir in Utah. And so I think it'll be a pretty nice piece of music, and that'll be a good way to go out. So I look forward to meeting you again next Monday on the same show here, Free Radio Santa Cruz. And if you want to stream it, you can go to freakradio.org and press the red button in the image of the tower. All right, have a good week, and Keep doing your spiritual exercise. We didn't give one out tonight, but we will the next time. Make up for it. Thank you.
forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil.